And we're holding on page 24 in Shabbos, seven lines from the bottom, middle of Ars Yud Ches. We started talking about that the Gemara pointed out that the Chachamim found that there seemed to be Psukim and Mishlei that contradict each other, and they were thinking to hide away, say, from Mishlei, but then instead they worked to resolve the contradictions. So one example is that you have back-to-back Psukim. One says, don't answer a fool according to his foolishness, and the other one says, do answer a fool according to his foolishness. And so as the Gemara said, the first one is talking about Mila D'Alma, don't bother answering him, and the second one is talking about Divrei Torah, there you should answer him so he doesn't think that he has the better of the argument. So we had examples yesterday of the first kind of thing where you don't speak back to her, where you don't answer him back when he's saying things that are foolish or chutzpahdik, like these guys who are harassing Rebbe and Rebchia. So b'divrei Torah mayhi, on the other hand, what do we mean in divrei Torah that you should answer him? He heard Yosef Rabbi Gamliel Kadosh. We have the example, Rabbi Gamliel one time was sitting and davening, asida isha shetelet b'chol yoyim. In the future, la'asid lavoi, a woman will give birth every day. As the pasuk says, the pregnant and the one who's giving birth will be together. So we'll be there at the same time. Meaning, so Rashi says, in other words, what it is the same way as he's going to go on to give an analogy of a chicken, that a chicken has a clutch of eggs, and every day the hen lays one egg. So the same way, a woman she'll be able to have relations regularly with her husband, and she'll have the pregnancies will be able to overlap such that each day there'll be. So in other words, Rashi is learning that the babies are still going to take the same amount of time to form. But what it means, oh, actually, it actually does say l'zman mu'at, it'll be a lesser time, but still the pasha is not all on the same day. In other words, the implication is that while she's pregnant with one, she'll be able to yet become pregnant with another one without it harming the first one and so forth, such that she'll be able to continue having babies again, like a chicken that lays eggs every day. The Arizal actually learns that not. So the Alter Rebbe brings this point in Igeres Chof Hei when he's talking about the various things that we see that we're going to need dinim of Torah, even lasid lava. You have a statement from the Zohar over there that on the face of it seems to imply that lasid lava we won't need Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara, and the Alter Rebbe says that's impossible. For example, with our Gemara over here, you're still going to need to know the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara as far as a woman who gives birth. So in Shurim B'Sefer HaTanya there it mentions that the Arizal has a different understanding of our Gemara, that attacker means the baby will develop faster, and therefore that she'll be able to become pregnant and give birth to a baby on the same day, unlike Rashi and Marsha, who are understanding that we're talking about overlapping pregnancies. Anyway, Liglig all of Oisa Talmud. A certain Talmud laughed at that. Omar, he says, doesn't the Pasuk say, In kol chodesh tachas Hashemesh? There's nothing new under the sun. So even La'asid Lavei, Hashem is not going to create new things in nature. Amalei, this being an example of the Divrei Torah, so Rav Gamliel wasn't just going to let it slide and let the guy think that he knows better than Rav Gamliel. So Amalei, Boi Va'arecha Dugmaseh Ba'Olam Hazeh, he tells him, come, I'll give you an example of something similar in Olam Hazeh, Nofak Achvilei Tanagolas, and he went and showed him a chicken, which does just that. In other words, where indeed you have exactly that it's fertilized with a bunch of eggs, and then it lays them one after another. Each egg takes 21 days to develop, but you have they're all overlapping. By the way, you have a Gemara in Sanhedrin where Rabbi Yochanan is teaching and in Baba Basra where Rabbi Gamliel is teaching certain things, and a Talmud laughs at him, and Rabbi Yochanan ends up punishing the Talmud, and the Talmud ends up becoming a heap of bones. Here you don't have that. Here instead, Rabbi Gamliel just answers him. Why is that? One explanation for the difference is because, after all, here this Talmud, fine, he's being malaglig, but at least he is basing himself on a pasuk in kol chodesh tachas Hashemesh. When you have over there, when it talks about, for example, that Rabbi Yochanan is teaching that la'asid lavei, the gates of Yerushalayim are going to be made out of enormous precious stones, and then the Talmud is laughing at him, he's not even bringing a pasuk, he's just saying there's no such thing in the world. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan treated him much more harshly than over here. At least the guy has a certain argument. You know, the fact is that the same Torah that's telling us what you, Rabbi Gamliel, are saying, the same Torah tells it in Kol Chodesh Tachas Hashemesh. the two Yosef Rav Gamliel of Kadosh, another time Rav Gamliel was sitting and darshaning, are sitting Ilonis Shemetzi in Paris for Chol Yoy. In the future, the trees will produce fruit every day. Shenema v'nosa onaf v'osa peri, as the Pasuk describes, in the simple meaning, the Pasuk over there is a metaphor for Malchus based David, and he describes over there how you have like a one twig of it has been taken, is going to be taken and planted on a high mountain representing Zerubbabel, from whom eventually Mashiach will descend. But still, the Gemara is understanding that it's also meant on a pshat level that the mushal has a meaning as well. So it means, in other words, that the trees will bear fruit. So ma onaf b'chol yom, just as trees produce new branches all the time, every day, af pri b'chol yom, the same way the fruit will grow every day. Again, Ligla all of Oisa Talmud, a particular Talmud laughed at him. Omavoksiv enko chodesh tachas Hashemesh. What about that pasuk? Omalei, so Rav Gamliel says, boi va'arecha dugmosin boi lamazeh. Come, I'll show you an example. Another mazeh, nofak achvi leit slath. He went and showed him a slath bush, in English it's called a caper berry, where that bush produces three different kinds of edible things. The Gemara talks about them in Brachas and some other places. And then also in Baba Rashi refers to a Gemara at the beginning of Baba Basra, in Baba Basra at the beginning of Cheskes Abatim that speaks of that. And the point is, each one, as you have, as one kind becomes unavailable, the next one becomes available. So therefore, you constantly have the tree is the bush is constantly producing something edible. So the same way, it'll be lost in love with all the other trees. The true Yosef Rav Gamliel of Kadosh, another time Rav Gamliel was sitting and davening, Asida Eretz Yisrael Shetotzi Gluskois Uklei Melas. In the future, Eretz Yisrael will produce rolls of bread. Gluskois means rolls of bread, Uklei Melas, and garments of silk or fine wool. Shenema Yehi Fisas Bar Ba'aretz, as the Pasuk says, there will be a Pisas Bar in the land. Pisas is Maloshan Pas Yod, which means the palm of the hand. So it means rolls, or it means rolls of bread, which are wide like the hand. And also the word bar then means grain. So the word pas is also like sonus passim, means garments of fine silk or wool or whatever. So therefore, Pisas bar, so it has the word bar has a double meaning. It means grain, it also means clean. So therefore, it means, first of all, that there will be loaves as wide as the hand of grain. And second of all, it also means that there will be clothing there will be clean, fine, beautiful clothing growing from the earth. So Akosif says it doesn't literally mean that there's going to be that there's going to be ready-made loaves of bread and ready-made clothes growing out of the earth. He says it just means, in other words, that the Rambam uses the expression kolam adanim mitzuyim kafir. It'll be so easy to obtain these things where that it'll be as if they grow from the earth. On the other hand, there are mefoshim who take it more literally. The Maharal talks about, for example, that before the Chet Eitz Hadas, that's how it would have been. Everything is ready, is ready made from the ground, and you don't really need a lot of work to put into it, and therefore loss and love, it'll be the same. Anyway, again, Liglug all of Oisa Talmud, a certain Talmud laughed at him, but Omer ain kol chodesh tachas Hashemesh, Omer lei, so again, Rav Gamliel tells him, boi va'arecha dugmosin b'olam hazeh, come, I'll show you an example of that in olam hazeh, nofak ach v'lek kmein or pitrius. So he went and showed him, as far as the loaves of bread, the similar thing that you have nowadays is mushrooms, where the cap of the mushroom resembles a loaf of bread. It's similar in shape to a loaf of bread, and it's also ready to eat right now. So therefore, so you have a semblance of that now. So all it is loss of lover that'll be more widespread, but you can't call it chodesh tachas Hashemesh. There's already a semblance of it now. V'aklei milas, as far as the garments of fine wool, he showed him navra bar kura. He showed him that there's a certain kind of softer material that grows around the heart of a palm tree when it's young. In English, it's called bast, and it's also a fine material, and you could conceivably make clothing out of it. So you have even now there is a semblance of that kind of thing, and loss of lover will have that from other trees as well. So therefore, it's not really chodesh tachas Hashemesh. I once saw somebody suggesting, you know, the fact that the Gemara says in all of this Oisei Talmud, we actually the Goyim claim that one of their top guys was a Talmud of Rav Gamliel. So maybe this Gemara is hinting at him. Kenzan. Okay. The Gemara says Tanan Abanan. So we just had examples now of, so we're saying that there's a difference between Mili D'Alma and Divrei Torah, how you should deal with a fool who brings up foolish ideas, whether you should answer him or not. And we have the example of how Rav Gamliel dealt with a Talmud who's asking foolish questions. So now in this connection, the Gemara goes on to tell a number of stories involving Hillel that bear out this idea as well. Tonan abanan, so we learn in a b'risa, la'olam ye'eh adam invasan kehillel, a person should always be humble like Hillel, va'al ye'eh captain keshamai, he should not be particular, captain is, what's the word for it, easily provoked, or like a captain Malamed, for example. You have somebody who's very by the book. Is not going to learn Torah well, so therefore is not going to teach Torah well. Rather, so you shouldn't be like Shammai in that regard. So first a story involving Hillel alone, and then afterwards we're going to have examples of how Shammai did. It happened once that there were two people who made a bet with one another. They said, whoever can go and get Hillel upset, Yitel Tof Zuz, is going to win 400 Zuz as the bet. And to give you an idea how much that is, in those times, a person could live on 200 Zuz for a year. So 400 Zuz, then you're talking twice what a person could live on for a year. What would it be in modern terms? 150,000, 200,000, whatever it is. It's an enormous amount of money. Anyway. So one of them says, I'm a sure one to win the bet. I have exactly the way to do it. So that day was Erev Shabbos. Hillel was busy washing and shampooing his head. So this guy goes and walks by the door of Hillel's house. Omar, and he starts calling out, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Who here is Hillel? As if you don't know the famous Hillel, as if Stam asking for your friend or something. And of course he's doing it while Hillel is busy on Erev Shabbos, figuring that he's not going to have time to deal with him. Hillel wrapped himself up, and meaning that he put on nice clothing also, and he went out to greet him. My son, a nice friendly way of speaking, what do you need? He says, I have a question. Go ahead, ask. He asks, why are the heads of people from Bavel wound? Now, besides that it's a very silly, irrelevant question to ask him on an Erev Shabbos, there's also a certain implied insult to Hillel. Hillel himself was from Bavel. So his very first question that he's asking about people's characteristics, and he's going to have two more, is about Hillel himself. Why are people from your place, why are their heads deformed? So he says, my son, you've asked a very great, important question. I'll tell you why. Because they don't have expert midwives. The midwife, after the baby is born, she has to shape the baby's head properly. They don't know how to do that, so therefore the heads come out misshapen. Now, Iyun Yaakov explains that you see from that the point was that Hillel figured that, he could say, this is a silly, irrelevant question. Come back another time and I'll tell you. But no, he doesn't want like this. What happens if later on, eventually the guy does have a real important question? He doesn't want the guy to be dissuaded from asking. So therefore, so that's why he's willing to deal even with his silly questions. Marshall, though, points out another point, though. You know, we just said before that in Mila D'Alma, you shouldn't answer a fool like his foolishness. These are Mila D'Alma. So why is Hillel dealing with him? Why didn't he do like Rebbe or Reb Chia respectively and just tell the guy, you know, he'll have a cup of wine or something, and instead of sitting down and answering this question? So Marshall explains that actually Hillel, being an exceptional Onav, figured maybe in fact this guy, when he's coming, it may sound on the surface like a very silly question. Maybe in fact he's actually asking on a matter of midas toves, or rather midas rois. you have in Pirkei Avos, it mentions the three midos of the Talmid of Shel Avraham Avinu, and then opposite them you have the three midos of the Talmid of Shel Bilam HaRasha, and those three midos are Ruach Gvoya, they're very proud, Bali Gaiva, but Ayin Ra, they're very stingy, even Nefesh Rechava, and they're very gluttonous and greedy. So now he thought that this guy with his first question is asking about the gas of Saruach, about the gaiva that is prevalent in Bavel. The Gemara mentions in some other places that that Bavel was particularly known for that kind of thing. There were many gasei haruach over there. The Gemara even traces it to Psukim in Zechariah that mention how Chanufa and gasei haruach, flattery and pride, came to Bavel. So now Hillel figured, when this guy is asking why are the heads of the Bavel being round, he means to hint at, I want to know what is it that causes the people of Bavel to have that kind to have that kind of bad midah prevalent among them. So he could have couched in a nicer term, but still, Hillel being an honor, figure that that's what he's hinting at, and therefore, so he answers him when he answers that they don't have good midwives. He's answering, in other words, because the word pikhos means smart. So it means, in other words, they don't have the smarts. They have instead gasus or ruach, and therefore they have shtus. What Marsha says is the Rashem Skalgalim, that their heads are round, represents, in other words, the idea of Gaugal Achoza Ba'ola, that you have riches constantly, the wheel of fortune is constantly turning, people are up, people are down. So why is it that people in Bavel tend to lose their wealth? He's asking. Why are their heads, meaning their greatness, round in the sense that they tend to go downward? And Hillel answers them because their gasei haruach, which goes hand in hand with not being smart, they don't have great knowledge of Torah, and instead they're gasei haruach and think of themselves as greater than they are, and therefore the result of that is they end up losing their nechosim. Okay. So the guy leaves, holach v'himten shah achas, he goes, he waits for a while, shah achas could mean an hour, it doesn't necessarily have to mean an hour, it just means a little while. Chaz of Amma mikan hilo, again he comes back yelling the same thing, again, you know, at least for the second time, he should already know who Hillel is, and just go knock on his door instead of calling out, whatever, nisata fiyata l'krosa, again, Hillel wrapped himself up and came out to greet him. Amale bni mata mavakish, what do you need? Amale sheila yeshli lisho, amale shal bni shal. The second question the guy asked, v'pnei ma enein shal Talmudian trutas. Why are the eyes of people from Talmud trutas? Now, Talmud is a city nowadays it's called Palmyra. They have famous ancient ruins over there. It's in Syria nowadays, near the border with Iraq. Originally, the city was built, or at least made into a great city, by Shlomo HaMelech. Later on, the Gemara tells us that the Goyim who lived there were very, very anti-Semitic. They helped out in Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni. The Gemara says there even brings an opinion you're not allowed to accept Gerim from that place. Anyway, it's basically an oasis in the middle of the desert. So in the middle of the desert over there on the border of Syria and Iraq, and in the middle of it, you have this fertile area where the city of Talmud is located. Anyway, the question is why the people... Why the eyes of people who live there are trutas. So Rashi says two possibilities of what trutas means. One is that their eyes are weak, and the other is that their eyes are rounder than normal. Like this, a normal person's eye, after all, is long and is elongated, and then, you know, comes to a point at both ends. Their eyes are rounder. So why is that? Amalei says, "Bni she'ela gdol l'sha'alta." You asked a very great question. The reason is they should dorin bein hacholos, because they live among the sands. So two possibilities. So if you say that trutos means that their eyes are weak, the reason is because the wind blows sand into their eyes. According to the second explanation, that trutos means that their eyes are round, then what it means is fakert. He says Hashem made it dafka that their eyes shouldn't be the normal shape, because then you'd have like a crevice at either end of their eye where sand is going to get trapped. So instead, Hashem did them a favor and made that their eyes are rounder, so that there's less places for sand to get stuck in their eyes. So Maharsha explains, in keeping with the explanation from before, that Hillel thought that this one also is that he's asking about one of the midos rois. In particular, the eye has to do it has to do with znus, has to do with ayin ra, with being stingy, and so on and so forth. So he's asking why do people in Talmud have that bad midah of ayin ra? And he answers them because they live among the sand, where the word choil, which means sand, also means as mundane or profane, like hamavdol ben kodesh l'chol. The Gemara in Yevamos, when it talks over there about the Goyim of Talmud and how anti-Semitic they were and whatever, it mentions that many of them were actually descendants of slaves of Shlomo, where Shlomo built up the city, the Pasuk mentions. So now he had slaves and servants who lived there, and eventually they rebelled against Shlomo and against the Jewish people in general and formed themselves an independent city-state, an independent kingdom, and they hated the Jews. So the point is, in other words, that because the Jews there lived among such lowly goyim, therefore they don't have the sense of kedusha as Jews who have yichus do. Because in other words, the point is, the Gemara there in Yevamos says that there were Jews who intermarried with those servants or with those slaves of Shlomo, and therefore they lack yichus. So that would be the explanation why they have these bad midas having to do with the eyes. Holach v'himtin sha'achas, the guy goes away, comes back a while later. Chazav amu mikan hilu, mis'ata fiyotza l'krosay. Amalei b'ni ma'ata mavakesh, what do you want? Amalei she'eli yashli lishal, I have a question. Amalei sha'al b'ni sha'al, my son, ask. The third question is, why are the feet of Africans very wide? This is a very important question you ask. The reason is, they should darin ben bitzei hamayim, because they live among the swamps. So again, Rashi has two explanations. One is because they live among the swamps, Hashem did them a favor and made their feet wider so they don't sink into the mud. The other explanation is because they live among the swamps, they go barefoot. Now, when you wear shoes, your shoes compress your foot into a certain shape. When you go around barefoot your whole life, then your feet spread out because there's nothing to constrain them. So therefore their feet end up wide. What was the symbolism behind this that Hillel thought the guy is asking is we're talking about the third midah, nefesh rechava, that a person is greedy and wants to amass as much wealth as possible. The word raglehem can refer to a person's wealth, like we find by Korach and his group, as called kumashev raglehem. So the question is why their feet are wide, in other words, why they have this great taiva for money. And the reason is, he says, because they live among the swamps, meaning, in other words, they live among goyim who love money, where in particular, Maharsha says, the people of Afriki, which Vipashtus means North Africa, are the descendants of Canaan. You have the famous thing of Girgashi Amadupana, that the Girgashim left Eretz Yisrael and they found a fertile land. Hashem brought them to a fertile land in North Africa and they settled there. So now the Jews who live among, so those goyim who live there are very greedy. And the Jews who live among them are also unfortunately affected by that, and therefore they also develop this midah of greed. So now the guy three times already he's tried and he sees he's not getting anywhere with winning his bet. I have lots of questions to ask, but I'm afraid you're going to get angry. That itself maybe is part of his strategy. Even just mentioning that he might get angry might taka provoke Hillel into a little bit of anger. This act of Yoshua Funov, no, Hillel wraps himself up and sits down in front of him. Up until now, by the way, it was Nisata for Yotza Lekrosi. He wrapped himself up in nice clothing and went to see him. Now he's sitting down. I have all the time in the world for you, even though it's Erev Shabbos and so forth. Omalei kol she'elos yesh l'cholishol shal, ask all the questions you have to answer. Omalei, so the guy asked, Ato hu Hillel shekoren oscha nasi Yisrael, or you Hillel, whom they call the Nasi of Yisrael, which is also an insult ring that they call you. He is the Nasi of Yisrael. He's making it sound as though they're only calling you that, but you're not really that. Yes. If that's you, there shouldn't be more like you among your people, which is certainly something Maharsha points out is very much calculated to provoke Hillel's anger. Still nothing. My son, why? What's the matter? Why don't you want there to be more people like me? So the guy said, because I lost 400 zuz because of you. So Hillel tells him, be careful with your spirit. In other words, control yourself. In other words, that you're wrong saying that you lost 400 zuz. Hillel deserves that you should lose on his behalf 400 zuz and another 400 zuz, which Marashah says, in effect, that's what you've done. Not only you didn't gain the 400 zuz that you expected, you lost the 400 zuz because you lost the bet to your friend. But still, the Hillel lo yakbid, I be that Hillel should not be makbid. Okay, so now what about Hillel versus Shammai? So turn on Abonin. Maisa ben Nochri Echad Jabalif Ne Shammai. A goy once came to Shammai. Omale Kama Tordis Yesh Lachem. He asked him, how many Tordis do you Jews have? Omale Shtayim. Tordis Shabachsav, but Tordis Shabapeh. Omale, so the guy says, Shabachsav Anima Mincha. As far as the Tordis Shabachsav, it's in writing. I'm willing to believe you that that's genuine and that that's important. But as far as the Torah Shavapeh, I don't believe you, that I don't want to believe you. You might be making it up. It might not be important, whatever. Make me a ger on condition that you'll teach me only Torah Shavapeh. So Shammai yelled at the guy and then made him leave in disgrace. Now, by the way, we are saying before that Shammai was a captain, and we know that was the case. On the other hand, Shammai himself is the one, he says in Pirkei Avos, Hevi Makabel, as Kol Adam Save upon him Yofus. So it's not like, we're not talking about that Shammai was some kind of mean guy, Chas V'Shalom. What it is, there's a few different angles on it. One point is that Shammai figured that upholding the honor of the Torah is more important. So if this guy is gonna treat the Torah, so he's gonna talk about the Torah so disrespectfully, an entire portion of Torah, he says is not important, then you can't show friendliness to such a guy, whatever. You got to put him in his place and get him out of it. There's a sicha in Chelek Tes Zayin, actually, where the Rebbe talks about that we find throughout Shas, Machloikas, and Bishamai and Bishillel, where many times Bishamai goes according to how things look on the surface, whereas Hillel delves below the surface to look deeper. And so you have over here also, Shammai sees only the superficiality of the guy that he's saying such a ridiculous thing, and therefore get out of here. Whereas Hillel looks deeper and sees there's more here than meets the eye. So Balifne Hillel Gaiva. So he came to Hillel and Hillel was Megaiva. Now how could he be Megaiva him at some point, at such a point? Isn't there, Rashi brings, there's a halacha that you can't, if a person comes and says, I'm willing to become a ger, except that I'm not willing to accept one particular halacha, we can't accept him. Here the guy is not willing to accept an entire part of Torah. How is he accepting him? What it means is, Rashi explains, Hillel realized that the guy is not really denying Torah Shabbat Peh. He just doesn't believe yet. He doesn't understand yet that it's also given by Hashem. He thought that it's made up by people and therefore it's not important. He realized, Hillel knew for certain that once he teaches him, as he's going to go on to do, then the guy is going to realize that Torah Shabbat Peh is of equal importance to Torah Shabbat Peh. So therefore you can be Megayah him on that basis. So Yoy Makama Omalei Aleph Beis Gimel Dalad. So the first day starts teaching him the letters of the Aleph Beis. Lamacha Apichle. When the guy comes back the next day, then he switched them around. It can mean that he switched around the names of the letters. So what he told him yesterday was an Aleph. Now he's telling him it's a Dalad. Or it could mean just that he switched around the order of the letters. That before he was telling him the order is Aleph Beis Gimel Dalad, and now he's telling him the order is Dalad Beis is Dalad Gimel Beis Aleph. Which, after all, the order of the letters, Marashah points out, also has great significance as far as gematria and as far as lots of other things. Anyway, Omalei, so the guy says, you didn't tell me that yesterday. So what? Which one is correct? What you told me yesterday or today? Omalei, so Hillel says, Lava lied di kasamchas. Don't you see that you have to rely on me just to even know the names and the order of the letters? Dal penami smoichalai. When it comes to Torah Shabbat Peh, you can also rely on me that yes, I'm teaching you what's truth. And without Torah Shabbat Peh, you won't even begin to understand Torah Shabbat Peh. And the guy realizes that the Torah Shabbat Peh had to have also given by Hashem, had to also have been given by Hashem because it would be impossible to even begin to understand Torah Shabbat Peh without Torah Shabbat Peh. Then there was another goy who came to Shammai. He says, make me a ger on condition that you teach me the whole Torah while I'm standing on one foot. Now, it could mean poshut exactly that, like he thinks as though the Torah is so simple and so easy that you could just learn it in a few minutes that you're standing on one foot. Maharsha says that no, the guy understood that he meant that he wants one basic idea that the whole Torah depends on. But still, doch by ba'amas abinyan shabiyadri, Shammai pushed him away with the measuring rod for a building that he was holding in his hand. Why now in the previous one, all upset is he yelled at him and men made him leave. Why he was using an amas abinyan, Maharsha explained, he's hinting to him with that the same way. What would you expect to build an entire building standing on one pedestal? It won't last. The same way, you can't expect to reduce the whole Torah to one principle. The Torah is so wide, like a gigantic building, you can't possibly make it stand on only one principle. But he came to Hillel, and Hillel was Megayer him again with the same idea as before, that he knew that that once he teaches him the truth, then he'll understand that he'll understand what Torah really is all about. Amalei, he tells him that the one basic rule of the Torah is da'aloch sani l'chad l'chad rachlei savid, what you hate, don't do to somebody else. Zui kol ha'Torah kula, this is the entire Torah. The idach pirusha, the whole rest is the explanation of it. Who? Zil gmur, go and learn it. Now, you know, you have many times people quote the story and they leave off that zil gmur part. They talk about, you know, this is the whole Torah, and they forget that there is, in fact, a whole Torah to learn, which is what Hillel is telling the guy. Now, Rashi deals with the question that takes care of mitzvahs shebenanu l'chaveirim. What about mitzvahs benanu l'mokim? How are those included in that? So Rashi has two explanations. First of all is that Hashem is metaphorically called your friend as well. You have a pasuk in Mishlei that refers re'acha v're'a avicha al tazav, don't abandon your friend and the friend of your father. That means Hashem. So the same way you wouldn't like somebody to disobey you, the same way you don't disobey Hashem. So therefore, it includes the mitzvahs, but not on lamakim as well. Second of all, Rashi says, okay, it means most of the mitzvahs. Most of the mitzvahs are benon lachaveiro, or at least have a benon lachaveiro component, and therefore they're included in this. Now, we have, of course, there's the famous thing that the Alter Rebbe explains in Perek Lamed Beis and Tanya, that once you realize that your neshama is the more important thing, and all neshamas are one in their source, then automatically you come to v'ahaf l'rech kamaycha, and that mentality itself makes you do all the mitzvahs, because you realize that your neshama needs the nourishment from those mitzvahs. Maharsha asks, why didn't he tell him in the positive? Or fine, the guy doesn't understand Lashon Kodesh, tell it to him in Aramaic. But why instead is he doing a new formulation of it? So the reason is, he says, because the what do you have previously in that pasuk? The pasuk v'ahav to l'orech kamocha is the middle of a pasuk. The beginning of the pasuk is loisika and veloisita es bnei amecha. Don't take revenge. Don't bear a grudge against a fellow yid. And ve'ahav to l'orech kamocha. So Hillel understands that ve'ahav to l'orech kamocha is part of that. In other words, don't do to him. You wouldn't want somebody to take revenge on you. You wouldn't want somebody to bear a grudge against you. Therefore, you shouldn't do it to somebody else also. So in other words, ve'ahav to l'orech kamocha, Hillel's understanding does not necessarily mean that you have to treat him equally as you as far as doing good. In fact, you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia, for example, that says that the famous case where two people are traveling in the desert and they have only enough water for one of them, so only one of them will drink, even though it means the other one is going to die, because otherwise, if they share the water between them, both of them are going to die, and chayecha koydin. You have other examples, that other places in the Gemara that make the same point, that chayecha koydin. So therefore, Hillel understood that it can't necessarily mean that you have to do for another yid exactly as you would want done to yourself, because you can't always, not always are the circumstances that you can do that, but at least as far as not doing to him what you wouldn't want to do to you, that he can do. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well. because it's the Jewish people who are Rachmonim, Bashanim, and Goyim Lachsadim. The Goyim don't have those midas. Therefore, if you tell the guy that the fundamental concept of Yiddishkeit is where I have to go to Echamaycha, that's going to scare off the guy altogether. And he will realize this is a real potential ger, and therefore it's true. You do have to try to dissuade a ger, but not too much, not in a way that's going to scare him off completely. And therefore, he's telling him something that he can deal with on his level. So sure enough, the guy went and learned and became a ger. Then shuv ma'isa ba'akum echad shoy over achor beisaknesis. Then there was a third guy who one time was walking behind a shul. The shama kil sofer. He heard the teacher who was teaching the kids over there in cheder shoy oimer ve'eva begonim. Actually, yasu koshin ve'efad. He's teaching the kids parshas tzava about the clothes of the coin bottle. Omer halolu lemi. So the guy comes in and asks, who are these clothes for? Omer le the coin bottle. So the malamed tells him these are the clothes for the coin bottle. So the guy thinks to himself, you know what? Let me become a ger so that I can become a kohen gadol and be able to wear those beautiful garments. Yeah, you have to realize, you know, I mean, in goyish societies of that time, being a priest or a high priest or whatever, a lot of times it was a political appointment or something. So, you know, in his goyish cup, you know, as far as he knew, it might be the same thing by us. You had to during those times. After all, you had the kohen of the kohen and brother were both their way into the position. So yeah. Anyway, Bolifne Shamai comes to Shamai, Omale Gaireni Amanasu to Simoni Kohen Gadol. Again, Dochve Ba'amas Abinyan Shabiyadoi. Shamai pushed him away with the measuring stick, with the building measuring stick that was in his hand. Again, why the same measuring stick as before? Marsha says the same way as the previous guy, Shamai was telling him, you can't reduce the whole Torah to one principle. The same way now he's telling him, you think the whole Torah stands on the kahuna? No, it doesn't. So, and if you think like that, then it would be like trying to build a building based on one pedestal, and you can't do that. He came to Hillel, and Hillel was Megayim him, as we said before. But now Hillel tells him, Omale, Klum Ma'amidin Melech Elamish Yedeh Tachsise Malchus. Listen, when you can't appoint a king if he doesn't know what the behavior is that's expected of a king. Leich Lamod Tachsise Malchus. Now that you've become a ger, then go learn the proper behavior for a king. In other words, you want to be a kohen gadol, fine, you have to learn the Torah, which is going to tell you how a king or how a kohen gadol was supposed to act. So now Marsha explains actually that here, the gaire doesn't actually necessarily mean that he actually literally made him a ger. With the other ones, fine. Rashi says you could be Megayer him, knowing that he'll be able to convince him of the right thing. Here you have a different issue. The halacha is if somebody says I want to become a ger because I want wealth or power or whatever, then you don't accept such a ger. Here the guy is outright saying I want to become a ger in order to become a kohen gadol. Therefore, how can Hillel be Megayer him in violation of that halacha? Therefore, Marsha says it doesn't mean that he actually was Megayer him at that point. Just means he's telling him, fine, we'll accept you as a ger, but first you have to learn Torah. And in that case, then the question becomes, and in that case, you can't teach a goy Torah. And the difference is, if he's coming to become a ger, then you can. Anyway, so halach v'kara, so he went and started learning Torah. Kivinchi gil of azara korev yomos. He reached the pasuk that says the stranger who comes close is going to die. Omale mikra zeh minemar. So the guy asks, who is this pasuk referring to? Who is the zar? Omale, and Hillel tells him, afilu al David melech Yisrael. Means even David HaMelech is not from Shevet Levi. So now that ger realized to make a kavachoyma for himself. Umay Yisrael shemikru bonim lamokim madach the born Jews who are called the children of Hashem. When we take Abba Sha'avim, Korolahem mi b'chodi Yisrael, and because he loved them so much, he called them my firstborn son Yisrael. And yet Sivaleim v'azora korav yumos. Yet we're saying that any stranger, any non-koyan who comes to the Beis Hamikdash when he's not supposed to is going to die. Ger hakal, a much more lightweight ger shabba maklev tamila, who just came with his walking stick and with his bag, like in other words, as if like he's got just like a hobo who wandered into town. Alachas kamav kama. How much more so that what makes me think? What was I ever thinking that I thought I could be a kohen gadol? So he comes to Shammai. Isn't it true that I'm not suitable to be Kohen Gadol? In other words, Maharsha says, he's saying to Shammai, instead of just pushing me away with a measuring stick, you should have told me that. You should have told me very, very calmly, you know what, it says, and that means even born Jews who are not from Shevet Levi, all the more so you. So why instead did you do that? You humble person, Hillel, your nuchul brachas al roshcha, may brachas rest on your head, because you brought me close under the wings of the Shechin. So again, Shammai had a valid reason for what he was doing, because after all, you know, again, he figured that the honor of the Torah is at stake over here. But still, the guy is telling Shammai there was a better way of going about it that would have preserved the honor of the Torah and still not use this inappropriate anger against him. Eventually, these three geirim met up in one place. Omru, and they said, the particularness of Shammai would have banished us from the world. We would have lived our whole lives as goyim. We never would have become yidden. If it had been up to Shammai. In Vesnusay Shel Hillel, on the other hand, Hillel's humility, kirvanu tachas kanfei Shechina, brought us close under the wings of the Shechina. So we owe everything that we are now to Hillel and his anivus. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Your chof on the base. The Chazal say in Masechta Bava Basra that Asidim Tzadikim Sho'im Lefneim Kodesh, in the future the Tzadikim will have the word Kodesh said in front of them, Kederach Sho'im Lefneim Kodesh Baruch Hu, the same way as the word Kodesh is said by the Malachim in front of Hashem. So the Rebbe talks about all the Giluyim or all the revelations of the course of La'asid are all depend on our on what we do and our avodah throughout the time of Galus. So therefore, this Gilui of the future, this Asidim Tzadikim, and we don't just mean Tzadikim, we mean all the Jews, because Va'amich Kolam Tzadikim, that comes about as a result of the avodah that we do during the time of Galus, as far as keeping the tzivoi, the commandment in the pasuk, v'iskadishkin v'yisim kadoshim, make yourselves holy, which means kadish atzmacha b'mutoloch, where we know that means that even in things that are allowed, even in yonid v'shus, there has to be kedusha, as in the pasuk, b'chol d'rachecha d'ehu, you have, by the way, the Ramban has a long explanation at the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim about that idea, that he talks about the famous idea of novel b'shus ha-Torah. You can have a person who's following all of black letter halacha, but is still acting as a behemish kind of person. So therefore, when you have the opposite of that, the b'chol d'rachecha d'ehu, this condition, this kedoshim, then the Rebbe is saying over here, that brings about this astidim tzadikim shiyom l'fneim kodesh. Continuing on halachas of if you made a bracha and then they brought you more of the same food. So yesterday we talked about that the dinim of that as far as bread, the difference being whether for example you bought some bread in the store and then you bought some more afterwards, or you know you have a more common case nowadays. Let's say for example you order a slice of pizza and you realize it's not enough and then you order another slice versus when it's in your house. So now Sif Beis, if you make a bracha on fruit that you're eating, and then they brought you more of the same fruit. So now it depends. Again, if when you made the bracha, you had in mind or whatever else they're going to bring, and the Alter Rebbe adds, even if you didn't have the feirush in mind to be tepatur with this bracha, then even if all of what he had at first is gone, and even if the new food is a different min, as long as it has the same bracha, then you don't make a separate bracha on the new food. If it really is nimlach, meaning really you originally intended only to eat the ones that are in front of you, now you changed your mind and decided to eat more, then even if it's from the same min, and even if you have more left of the original, then you would have to make a bracha on the new ones, because that's called nimlach, that's you actually changed your mind, and therefore a new bracha is required. What about, he continues, what if you just thought stam, you didn't particularly have anything in mind, then it depends. If when they brought you the second batch, there was none left of the first batch, then you would need to make a new bracha. If you had some of the first batch left, then there would be a suffix. So therefore, it's best to have in mind when you're making the bracha, have in mind everything that's yet going to be brought to you. If you didn't do that and just missed stammer, then it's the usual thing of suffix brachas lahakol. So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't eat from the second batch. The Alter Rebbe says you don't need to worry about the suffix brachas lahakol. Chanan min akasha emetz or kodesh baruch hu zakas yisrael.